Lee, which would be very, very exciting and very interesting because it would open up a whole new area of research and all that stuff. We're going to, I think, that just kind of bring this to a nice close. And the close that I want to bring it to, hopefully, is the idea that that the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source. So observer here at rest, source moving around. Speed of light is independent of the motion of that source is sort of obvious and easy to understand and easy to believe. And that's what Einstein actually stated as one of the principles upon which the theory was developed. The alternate statement that the speed of light is independent of the motion of the observer toward away from the source is just completely bizarre. A flashlight at rest there, if I run toward it and away from it, the fact that I would see the same speed, the speed c, is just really bizarre. It's impossible to understand with a wave and ether model of light. It's impossible to understand with a particle and vacuum model of light. Any model of light you can think of, it's just totally unbelievable. So it took special relativity to make that believable, to make that understandable. Okay, so I want to try to get to that point. Anyways, where we left off, we had talked a bit about the geometry of space-time, the Minkowskian geometry, the fact that we definitely have a geometry in space-time. If this is time and this is space, we have a geometry, but it's not the ordinary geometry. So a 3-4-5 triangle looks like this, where it's this squared is this squared minus that squared. So it's different from the kinds of geometries we're familiar with, but nevertheless is a valid and useful geometry, and in fact what the world is, what space-time is. I wanted to also point out, and then we said, okay, well, we can use this, we can just put two triangles together like this to talk about the twins paradox. So this is 5, 5, 4, 4. If Alice stays at rest on the Earth and just sits there for 10 years, and Bob goes to some distant planet, which is 3 light years away, and then comes back, less time will elapse for him, and there's no, it's totally obvious. It's a no-brainer why that's happening. And it's also a no-brainer why you can't reverse the perspectives, why you can't say, oh, well, wait a minute, Bob can say Alice is drifting away and then coming back. Well, it's obvious that you can't. Okay, so all of that. So it's all very good, all very fine and well. There's one other point I wanted to mention, which is sort of a direct spin-off of that, is that sometimes when you're studying special relativity, one is always dealing with frames of reference in relative motion, and we always imagine that these frames of reference are moving with constant velocity, uniform motion. So sometimes, I mean, especially if one approaches relativity with that, you know, from that direction, one sometimes gets the misconception that special relativity can't deal with accelerated observers. And that's absolutely not true. I mean, special relativity can very easily deal with accelerated observers. Okay, and so to show you that, and in fact, that's very important. In fact, that's exactly how Einstein got from special relativity to general relativity. He looked at what accelerated observers look like in flat space-time. Okay, so he took accelerated observers in flat space-time, which led to some certain thought experiments, which again, hopefully next week we'll have a bit of time to discuss a bit. But those thought experiments were crucial in him making that leap from special to general relativity. So accelerated observers are important, and they're also very easily dealt with within the context of special relativity. So let's look at this twins paradox from a more realistic perspective. Okay, the perspective that I just drew over there looked like this. It had two triangles like this, and these are very sharp. This is a very sharp corner here. So physically, what that would mean is Bob is moving at 4/5 the speed of light, and then at this instant of time, you know, 4/5 the speed of light toward the planet, and then at this instant of time, he switches around and moves at 4/5 the speed of light in the opposite direction. That's like running really fast this way and instantly really fast this way. Okay, that's physically impossible. He can't do that. More realistically, can someone tell me what this curve, what Bob's curve would look like more realistically? Like an arc, right. So let's try to draw this a little bit more carefully. So here's Bob. Bob starts on the Earth. He's right beside Alice. He's standing beside Alice. And then he takes off toward that planet. Okay, he's initially moving very slowly. If Bob is at rest, what is his world line? If he's at rest with respect to Alice? Straight up. So his world line would initially start straight up. He's standing beside Alice. then his rocket engines fire, and he would start to pick up speed. Okay, so remember, this is at rest with respect to Alice. That's moving with respect to Alice. That's moving faster. That's moving faster. That's moving at the speed of light if we're at 45 degrees. So the slope of his line, of his world line, should slowly change from vertical over to 4/5 the speed of light, something like that. Okay, so this line will curve gently like this to about like that, 4/5 the speed of light, less than 45 degrees. So during this portion of the curve, he is accelerating. Okay, and then he picks up speed to 4/5 the speed of light. He shuts his engines off, and he just coasts. Now what is the shape of his world line? What's the straight line? It's a straight line at this slope. Okay. And then, he's moving at 4/5 the speed of light toward this planet. He's kind of like slow down, right? So when he slows down, what happens to his curve? Okay, so it curves to the left. So it smoothly curves like this. So this part is coasting. This part here is deceleration. Okay, and then he stops off at the planet. Okay, he's traveled 3 light years to get there. He's not going to just immediately turn around and come back. He's going to like hang out, you know, break out his lunch, you know, have like some Coke or whatever, and then he's going to wait for a little while. So his world line is vertical. So he's going to stay here for a bit and visit. And then when he's good and ready, then he's going to get in his spaceship again, and he's going to go back. And his trip back is going to be just the reverse of this. He's going to first start out moving slowly relative to the planet and then pick up speed faster and faster and faster. So he's accelerating back. When he reaches 4/5 the speed of light in the opposite direction, he'll now coast. When he gets close to the Earth, then he's going to decelerate. And that line will smoothly, his world line will smoothly meet up with Alice's world line. And he touches down here. So this is decelerate back. This is coast. Okay, so that's a more realistic twins paradox kind of trip. And now, okay, so how do we figure out how much time elapses for Bob compared to Alice? Okay, well, on this picture, let's just arbitrarily pick some units here. So this is Alice's clock ticking. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. So 19 years elapses for Alice. She's just sitting there. Okay. So now, by having just put units on here, what we know is that this interval here represents 1 year for Alice. Okay. For Bob, this is not going to be 1 year. This is going to be less than 1 year. Okay. So when he first starts taking off, his clock reads 0. His clock reads 1 where? Does it read 1 exactly across from here, or slightly above, or slightly below? Sorry, say again? Slightly above. Okay, so 1 is slightly above. And then 2 is even a little bit more above, so 2 might be here. So that's 1, that's 2. And now, between here and here, if this is 1 year for Alice, he's moving at 4/5 the speed of light. I think for 1 year for Alice, this would be 3/5. So from there to there would be 3/5 of a year. So a full year might be, say, about that long. Okay, so basically we've got 1, 2 years there. So his clock reads 3 here. His clock reads 4 when he starts to decelerate. And then maybe it's 5 there. And then maybe it's 6 years here. This is approximately the same 6. But now when he's at rest with respect to Alice, 1 year for Alice corresponds to 1 year for Bob. So we just take this distance between our fingers and say, oh, well, that means that's 7, and that means that's 8. And then he starts to pick up speed again. So this is maybe 9. This is maybe 10, 11, whatever. Oh, I'm sorry, doing it the wrong way. So this is maybe 9 here. And maybe, let's just say this is 10. And then it was 2 years to get there. So it'll be 2 years to get back. So 10, 11, 12, and then maybe 13, 14. Okay, so then at the end of the day, we see that, so Bob's clock, what is Bob's clock? Bob's clock, as the hands of his clock turn, that's like that little wheel with the markings on it that we roll along the ground. So how many times does it roll along here? So it's actually measuring the Minkowskian distance in meters of this space-time trajectory of this world line. So his clock reads 14, and Alice's clock reads 19. So he's 14 years older, Alice is 19 years older, and that's it. It's just distance through Minkowski space-time. Yeah.
How do you know if time is dilated or like stays the same when the person is accelerating? Isn't it possible to keep like anything? Because it obviously isn't the same as when you're moving at constant speed. So how do you know it's dilated?
So acceleration itself doesn't have any effect on a clock. So it's not as if, I mean, it does in a certain sense, but I mean, all you need to do is, let's in fact just work. Let's actually talk about, to try to answer that question, let's talk about how it is we actually would get these numbers here. Where is it that exactly that we would put these tick mark lines? Well, what we would do is, here's a general trajectory that Bob is going on, something like that. Okay, at all points on this trajectory, Bob's world line is less than 45 degrees. So it always lies within that light cone, within that forward light cone. Okay, so what we would do is we would just say, okay, here is Alice's frame of reference, X Alice, CT Alice. And what we would do to determine the tick marks along Bob's world line is we would say, okay, well, what is the Minkowski distance between here and here? Okay, well, we would draw a little triangle like this, and we would say, well, how much time elapsed for Alice, and how far did Bob go according to Alice? And then we would say, this distance squared is this squared minus this squared. And then we would know that distance. We would know how much time elapsed between there and there for Bob. Okay, and then we would go to the next point here, and we would draw another triangle like this. And we would say, well, what is that distance? How much time elapsed for Bob there? Well, we would go this squared minus this squared equals this squared. So we take the square and we know that. Okay, so we would just iterate this process along. We would divide Bob's world line into a whole bunch of short little straight segments and apply this Minkowski triangle rule to each one of those segments. And then we would get all of these times along here, and that would be that. And so acceleration doesn't affect the clock in any way. It's not as if acceleration itself somehow slows down clocks. Acceleration bends the trajectory, sure. Okay, and that's going to affect the result of our calculations here when we put triangles there. Because is this a very thin triangle, or is this an acceleration will change the triangle from being, you know, very, very thin, like this triangle, to much a much fatter triangle like that. Okay, but acceleration itself doesn't really affect the clock or an ideal clock, at least. Yeah.
Size of the triangle, would it be according to Alice's or Bob's time? Because you don't know Bob's time. That's what we're trying to figure.
That's
out.
Right.
So
you're yep.
Alice's,
yep. The size of the triangle is arbitrary. It's whatever we choose it to be. So we just make the triangle small enough so that this line, whatever it is approximately straight. But for convenience, we might do something like this. As you're saying, we might say, okay, well, here's Bob's world line, and here's Alice's. We already know Alice's time here. Okay, so let's just take these guys over like that, and then use those as points along Bob's curve. And then say, yeah, okay, well, what's now the distance between here and here? Well, we take this distance squared minus that distance squared is that. And then we could fill in all the corresponding times. So this is 1 year for Bob. This is 0.7 years for Bob. This is 1 year for, sorry, 1 year for Alice, 0.7 for Bob. 1 year for Alice, maybe this is 0.6 for Bob. 1 year for Alice here, maybe that's also 1 year, because it's nearly vertical there, and so on. And then we would build it up and determine at the end of the day, when they meet again, this is traveling faster than the speed of light, by the way. When they meet again, we then add all these things up, and we determine the total time. The other thing to say is Bob doesn't experience any of this slowing of time. Okay, for Bob, there's nothing strange is going on at all. If before he left, his heart rate is going at one beat every second, according to his watch, then throughout his entire trip, it is always one heartbeat per second. Okay, he doesn't feel the slowing of time. It's a relative effect. He only notices that something as weird is going on with time when he compares, when he gets back and compares with Alice and says, well, you know, everything was fine for me. You know, 14 years elapsed. Nothing was weird about time. And then he looks at Alice and says, whoa, you're 19 years older, and I'm only 14. It's only when they get back and compare. So time dilation is a relative effect. OK? hence the theory of relativity. Okay, you can't tell intrinsically that this is happening. Yeah. Yeah, no. So your question is, well, we're always using sort of two people. Well, what if we use one person? But when you say that, so you're saying if I like move my hand back and forth really fast, close to the speed of light, then time will move. If I had a clock on there, if I watched my watch or whatever, right, then time would move more slowly for that clock than for the rest of me. And so it is true, I would age more and my hand would age less. So if I kept doing that. If I had done this from the time I was a baby, moving like almost the speed of light, like this, I'd still have a baby hand. So But we are comparing two clocks again. Here's one clock that's in motion, and here's the other clock, the rest of me. So we always are talking about two clocks when we're comparing this time dilation. Yeah.
So first of all, has anyone developed a new calculus for that and calculated? Like the exact time for
it. Yes.
Okay. Second question. So the for example, particles, right? They vibrate at a very high speed. Like the vibration. Could that be like part of?
They vibrate. How do they vibrate? Like in a quantum sense? So a particle with a certain momentum has a certain wavelength, and you're thinking about that wavelength and that period of the wave as being a vibration. And maybe that somehow will affect the time?
Oh, but if you just look at them as particles, don't they just vibrate in a mechanical sense?
I don't know. Like as classical particles?
Yeah.
So if I throw an electron across the room, and I'm thinking of electrons classically, I mean, I would imagine that it just goes on a straight line. Now, quantum mechanically, I know it's doing really funky things, different from that. But classically, I would just think it's going along a straight line smoothly. But, so I don't think so. I think what you're getting at is that maybe this effect on time, or maybe in addition to the effects on time we're talking about here, if a particle were vibrating like crazy while it's traveling, then maybe that will affect the time. As recorded by that particle, and I would say that's probably true. It would, yeah. But I don't think it does. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. How does relativity of something? How does that kind of play in with its effect according to what's causing that effect?
Let's talk about that right now. Okay. So. So first of all, before talking about relativity simultaneity, we need to talk about what are simultaneous clocks. How do you synchronize clocks? So that's the next topic here. Okay, so so two clocks. Does anyone have that sticky tack paper stuff? Post-it ones? Oh, that's super. That's super. Can I borrow that?
Yeah.
And your pen? Okay, super. This red one is great. Okay. So here we've got two clocks. Okay, so two clocks. Super. Okay. Thank you. So here I've got two clocks. They're very small clocks. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to synchronize them. Okay. So that means when one reads 12 o'clock, then the other one reads 12 o'clock, and now they're in sync forevermore. Tick 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 tick. They're identical clocks. Okay. And so I've got one of them over here and one of them over here, and I'm happy. They're in sync. I can see they're in sync. Okay, so now I'm going to take these clocks, which are synchronized, and I'm going to pick this one up, and I'm going to walk over here, and I'm going to put it over here. Are those clocks still in sync?
No.
Why not? Right. Okay, so if we draw this on a space-time diagram, this process, this physical process by which I imagine I might be able to synchronize those two separated clocks looks like this. So one clock always stayed at rest over here, and so its time is going tick, 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 tick. And the other clock started in sync with it, so maybe it was there for a second or so, and then it accelerated over like this, and then I moved at constant speed as I drifted across the board, okay. And then I slowed down, and then I came to rest, and now the clock is sitting there at rest over there. Okay, so because of time dilation, we know that when this line is sloped here, when it's 1 second for that clock, it's less than 1 second for the clock as it's being walked across the room. Okay, so to the tick marks here might look like this. They'll be further apart, like this. Okay, after it's been brought to rest, then of course 1 second here corresponds to 1 second there. Okay, so now it looks like this. So this is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So they're 1 second out of sync because I did that. So how am I going to do it? How am I going to synchronize two separated clocks? What does that actually mean? Excellent. Okay, so two people start in the middle, they're synchronized, and then they walk in a symmetrical fashion to both sides. So we start in the middle like that. They're both together at first, and then one goes off like this and then comes to rest, and the other goes off like that and comes to rest. And so it is true that relative to someone who just stayed at rest in the middle, we would have these clocks time dilated in between, so there'd be a longer period here. But then once they're at rest again, they're in sync. So these guys would always be in sync just because of the symmetry. Okay, so there's lots of ways that we can do this. Another way that we could do it is we could say, we could just say here's a little platform here, and we've got a person over here holding one clock, a person over here holding another clock, and we have a light source right in the middle. Okay, and then that light source emits a flash of light, and we know by principle P2 that the speed of light, these two people can consider themselves to be at rest, and the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source. Here the source is at rest. So the light goes out with equal velocities in both directions. It's equal distance. And as soon as they get the light signal, they say, oh, they zero their clock. Okay, and then forevermore, those clocks are in sync. So in terms of a space-time diagram, this person looks like this over here. This person looks like this over here. And this source of light, at this point over here, it sends out a pulse of light in both directions. So we have a 45 degree like this. And when this guy receives that light pulse, he says, oh yes, zero my clock. And this one receives, she says, yes, zero my clock. And then forevermore, these are in sync. Okay, so all is well. So there are lots of ways to synchronize clocks. But the important thing is that synchronization of clocks is not an abstract thing. It's some physical process. You have to do something physical. Maybe involving sending a light signal back and forth and accounting for time delays and so on and so forth, or maybe having people walk symmetrically or whatever. There's something involved, some physical, definite physical process involved in synchronizing the clock. I'm going to go, so we've looked at a bunch of examples. I'm going to show you one way to synchronize a clock, which will turn out to be extremely useful for understanding this weird thing called relativity of simultaneity. Okay, so at the end of the day, they're all equivalent, but let's pick one particular way which will help us understand other things better later. Okay, so that way is we start here with some platform, and we've got, say, Alice at this end of the platform, and we've got Bob at this end of the platform. And what Alice does is she sends a light signal over to Bob, who reflects it back, and then she times how long it takes. Okay, so can someone fill in the details of that process? So Alice sends a light signal out. She looks at her watch. At time zero in her watch, she goes click, She sends a light signal out, it reaches Bob, it bounces back, and then she reads the time on her clock as, say, 10 seconds. What's she going to do then? How is this process of synchronization going to work? She reckons it takes 10 seconds for the signal to go from there and back. Right. Right. Okay, so basically, she takes the total time, 10 seconds, divides it by 2 and says 5 seconds, and says that basically the time that it took light, because I can assume that that light is moving the same speed out as back, according to principle P2. And so she sends the light signal out, it takes 10 seconds total time, so that means it must have taken 5 seconds to go from here to here. And so then she says to Bob that when you received that light signal, then your clock should have read 5 seconds. Because she sent it when her clock read 0 seconds. She knows it takes 5 seconds to get from there to there. She says, Bob, as soon as you got that light signal, it should have read, your clock should have read 5 seconds. And then Bob says, oh, my watch read 7 seconds. That means I have to turn it back by 2 seconds. And then forevermore, they're in sync. Okay, so that's the process. So let's draw this in a space-time diagram. So here's Alice up here. And here's Bob's world line. They're at rest with respect to each other. And they're both, and the point of view, let's call these actually Alice and Alice Prime for a reason that will become clear shortly. Because we're going to have a Bob and a Bob Prime. Okay, so Alice and Alice Prime do this. It's speed of light C out, speed of light C back. And so in a space-time diagram, when Alice's clock here reads 0, she sends the light signal zipping over to Alice Prime. Okay, and then Alice reflects that back. Okay, well, that doesn't quite look like 45, but in fact, I'm going to make it even look less like 45, just because I could fit it on the board here. Okay, so there and back, 45 degrees. So 45, 45. And then Alice says, oh, look. I got this signal back after 10 seconds on my watch. So what I do is I divide 10 by 2, and I get 5. And so I say that this event, this point in space and time, namely the point in space where Alice is at, and this particular time on her clock, that event, which we'll call, let's call this P, that event P, is simultaneous with this event. Okay, and so as I said, Alice says, look, Bob, when you received that light signal, your clock should have read 5. And Bob says, well, no, it read 7. And so then later on, she calls out afterwards. And so sometime later on in this space-time diagram, Bob turns his clock back by 2 seconds. So effectively, sitting at 5 there. Okay, and then forevermore, these guys are in sync. Oh, whatever. You know what I mean. made it too big. Okay, does that make sense? Is that all clear? Okay, also, what is the distance between Alice and Bob using these numbers? This is 5 meters. We're doing CT here. 5 meters. Okay, so we can convert 5 meters to a distance by dividing by the speed of, 5 meters to a time by dividing by the speed of light. So it'll be a very short amount of time. Okay, because obviously if Bob is 5 meters away, toom, toom, it's very fast. Okay, so using that time, Alice can reckon the distance to Alice Prime. And that method of reckoning the distance is called radar ranging. Okay, so of course that's how radar works. You send a radio wave or a microwave, which reflects off an airplane. You time how long it takes. You divide by 2, and you figure out the distance. You can also, distances to planets and things like that as well. Okay, so very, very useful technique. In fact, this is essentially how you would measure distances if you're out in space, right? You're in a spaceship, and you're trying to figure out, like, how far away is my buddy's spaceship over there? Well, you're not going to, like, get out of your spaceship and haul out your ruler. And start like, right? You're just going to send a light pulse and then have it reflect back and time how long it takes, right? So this is the standard method of measuring distances. Okay. That's it. That's all I wanted to say. Oh, yes. And also, okay, so this is Alice and Alice Prime. And this is how they synchronize their clocks. And they are happy, okay, doing this. And then there's also Bob and Bob Prime. And Bob and Bob Prime happen to be on a platform like Alice and Alice Prime, but that platform is drifting with respect to Bob and Bob Prime. It's moving to the right, let's say. Okay, but from Bob and Bob Prime's perspective, they do exactly the same thing. So here is Bob, and here is Bob Prime. And they do exactly the same synchronization procedure, and they are allowed to do exactly the same synchronization procedure. Okay, and that's because of principle P1. Principle P1 says that, sorry, let me back up. These guys here will use this procedure because they consider themselves to be at rest, and the speed of light is the same there and back, and so this is a valid procedure. Now, Bob and Bob Prime, they are drifting relative to Alice and Alice Prime, but that doesn't matter. Bob and Bob Prime are equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest. So we can run and catch up with Bob and Bob Prime and sit in their frame of reference and say, yeah, well, we're at rest. And according to principle P2, the speed of light is c, independent of the motion of the source. And so they're equally entitled to use exactly the same synchronization procedure. That's very important. Does that make sense? This is a physical process. And whether you're in this frame of reference or this frame of reference, you can use the same physical process to synchronize your clocks. Okay, so in their own reference frame, it just looks exactly the same. Bob sends a signal over to Bob Prime, it comes back, and then Bob takes this time here, divides by 2, and concludes that this event here is simultaneous with this event. Okay, and again, maybe this is 20 seconds or whatever. And then Bob divides it by 2 and says 10 and says, hey, Bob Prime, your clock should have read 10 at this point. And then forevermore, they're in sync. Okay, Bob adjusts his clock, and they're in sync. All right, so we've got that. So nothing very interesting so far. But now it gets interesting when we look at Bob and Bob Prime's physical process of synchronizing their clocks, sending this light signal back and forth, from the perspective of Alice and Alice Prime. Okay, here's where the plot thickens. Here's where we see something interesting happen. Okay, so we're going to be drawing more and more complicated space-time diagrams now. Okay, so let's just actually start with this little space picture here, just to sort of orient ourselves. So we've got Alice and Alice Prime. And they are in a space. Okay, they're at rest in their space. Okay, their space is however big we want it to be. Okay, so Alice and Alice Prime are at rest. Things are happening in their space. Things are moving around and so on and so forth. And in particular, Bob and Bob Prime are in their space moving around. Okay, so here is Bob and Bob Prime. And these guys are moving with some velocity v through Alice and Alice Prime's space. But I also want to point out, so this is the A prime space, so to speak. There's this big dash box over here. But Bob and Bob Prime, in and of themselves, if we were to run and catch up with them, they're in their own space. Okay, so this is the B prime space. And that B prime space is moving inside the A prime space. Okay? And in the BB prime space, if we've run and catch up with Bob and Bob Prime and are looking at them doing this experiment, the picture we would draw, because we're taking the point of view that B and B prime are at rest, is precisely this picture here. Okay? And of course, the AA prime experiment of synchronizing the clocks is just this one. Okay? Now what we want to do is draw a picture of what B and B prime are doing from the perspective of A and A prime, as if they are at rest. Okay, so how do we do that? Well, let's see. So we would say A and A prime are at rest. Okay, and what's B doing? Well, B is drifting to the right relative to A and A prime. Okay, so B is just doing this. That's maybe B. So at this point over here, so this is the left end of the platform. So really what that picture draws is take this platform, move it over here, and it's drifting like this. And this moment here, for example, that event is the left end of the BB prime platform passing the left end of the AA prime platform. Okay, so that's B. And of course, there's also B prime. Let me just try to draw this carefully so it looks good. And that's B prime. That's the right end of the platform drifting through the Alice and Alice prime space. And let's see. What do Bob and Bob prime do? Well, let's suppose that, ultimately what Bob does is he sends a light signal over to Bob prime. Okay, so we have a choice as to when that light signal is emitted. So just for the convenience of the diagram, let's suppose that the light signal is emitted. We've got this platform drifting through here like this. Let's suppose the light is emitted when the left edge of the platform, of the two platforms, lines up. Okay, so that's right at this point. So right at this instant over here, Bob emits a light signal which goes over to Bob prime. Question, in this picture, at what angle do I draw that light signal and why? 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 What are we relying on? Are we just guessing, or are we just doing this by, what are we relying on? It should be the same. What should? Okay, but what are we relying on? What's telling us that that should be true? Principle P2. So what I want to emphasize, and maybe I haven't been emphasizing this enough, but anything that we are doing, anything that we're going to do in all of our discussion of special relativity is always going to rely on principles P1 and P2. We will do nothing outside of those principles. Okay, assuming those are true, we will come to all kinds of logical consequences. And then we will look at those logical consequences and say, well, is that, you know, can we measure this to be true? And if yes, well, then that supports those principles upon which they're based. If we find that we get something which disagrees with what we observe in the real world, well, then the principles are false. So the principles are falsifiable. Okay, so anyway, so Bob sends a signal over to Bob prime, and from Alice's perspective, Alice and Alice prime, what they see is a moving source of light. Okay, Bob is drifting across like this, and he flicks the flashlight on. But the point is, according to P2, the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source. Here's a moving source, but so what? It's still C, according to Alice and Alice prime, so this is 45 degrees. 5 principle P2. Okay, so that light signal goes up like this, 45 degrees, and then boom, it hits Bob prime. And then Bob prime immediately reflects it back to Bob. Same question. What angle and why? 45 degrees because of principle P2. When Bob reflects this signal back to Alice, back to Bob, according to Alice and Alice prime, that's just a source of light that's in motion. Okay, in motion this way, sending a light signal that way. But nevertheless, for Alice and Alice prime, that's the speed of light. Okay, so that goes up like that. So this is also 45 degrees by principle P2. Okay. So now what's the next part of the procedure? What does Bob now do? Bob divides the time in two. On this picture, how do I divide the time in two? Yeah, it will be before, yeah. So basically, whatever this time is, maybe 10 or 20 or whatever it is, the point is that the tick marks on Bob's time axis here are evenly spaced. So we can just take this distance physically and just geometrically divide by 2. Okay, so what's half of that is maybe about there. Okay, so Bob then concludes that this event here is simultaneous with this event over here. Okay, if we go back to this picture, we're talking about this event being simultaneous with this event. when we take this picture and look at it from the point of view of Alice and Alice Prime, these two lines tilt over like this because Bob and Bob Prime are in motion. And this triangle, instead of being like even-sided like this, becomes this triangle. It's a bit of a distorted triangle here, but these are still at 45 degrees. But this is not at 90 degrees. This is not vertical. Okay, and so this pair of events becomes this pair of events. So P and P prime are simultaneous. So Bob and Bob prime say that P and P prime are simultaneous, just by definition. That's what simultaneous means. Okay, whereas, of course, Alice and Alice prime, these are not simultaneous. Okay, so as just pointed out, P is before P prime. Okay, so for Alice and Alice prime, what they would see is like their time is basically like this, is moving like this, and first they see P, and then later they see P prime. Okay, so the point here is if Bob and what it means physically, practically, is here's Bob and Bob prime. This is Bob, this is Bob prime, and they're drifting past Alice and Alice prime, which is you guys. Okay, and what's happening is, according to them, according to me, I'm snapping my fingers simultaneously, like that. Okay, if I have light signals connected from my fingers to my eyeballs or whatever, or ears or whatever, and well, that might not work, but whatever, you know what I mean. And they're equal distance and all that stuff. If I snap like this, it's simultaneous for me. But for you, it is this first, then this. So for me, it's simultaneous. For you, it's this, then that. Okay, and that is not an optical illusion of any kind, as I talked about on the very first day. Okay, even if you were like right next to me, like this, so that you're like, you know, you've got one hand, you know, at this hand and one hand at that hand, or one ear at that hand and one ear at that hand. Like there's no consideration of light traveling here and there and time delays or anything. Like if I'm right in your face, going right by you like this, this will be first, then this. Okay, so it's a physical difference in the sense of simultaneity. Okay, so the point is that the concept of simultaneity, the concept of two events being two events that are separated in space being simultaneous, is not an absolute concept in our universe. It does not have an absolute reality in our universe. The very concept of simultaneous is a relative concept. It's actually not a new idea. So about 5 years earlier, Poincaré had threw that idea out. He just tossed out the idea that, well, When we talk about that, when it's simultaneous for me, but if you're moving relative to me, is it necessarily simultaneous? So why do we assume that? Okay, so he had actually thrown that question out, but he had no real way of answering that. And Einstein was actually answered that. Okay, so it's an interesting idea that had occurred to other people, and then Einstein really showed that it ain't true in our universe. Our universe is more interesting. There are interesting subtleties like that. Okay, so that's all very fine and well. Now I want to talk a little bit about Bob's x-axis. Okay, so the basic idea is this. This is Alice's time axis, and here's, we're taking the point of view that Alice is at rest. Here's her time axis, and here's her space axis. Okay, so that means that her clock lies along this axis here, and it's going tick, 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 tick. And at, let's say, t equals 0, here is her ruler. At one instant of time, her ruler lies along this axis here. And this is 1 meter, 2 meter, 3 meter, 4 meter, 5 meter, that kind of thing. At a later time, maybe, say, 5 seconds, her ruler sits over here. That's 1 meter, 2 meter, 3 meter, 4 meter, 5 meter, and so on. So her ruler moves through time like this. Her x-axis moves along with her through time like that. Okay. Bob is this guy. We've been drawing Bob here, CTB. Okay, in exactly the same way that this line is Alice's time axis, this line here is Bob's time axis. There's some time dilation here, so the tick marks are a little bit further apart, okay, like that, and all that, as we've discussed. But in exactly the same way, this is Bob's time axis. Question, where's Bob's space axis? Where? Okay, draw. Okay, do it with your hand. That's Alice's x-axis. Everyone get your hand out. Which direction is Bob's x-axis? Is it like this? How many say it's like this? Okay, how many say it's like this? Okay, we got about 50-50. Well, let's figure this out. Okay, so first of all, okay, Bob's x-axis. Well, first of all, let's move to the point of view where Bob and let's go back to Bob and Bob prime here. Okay, and so we've run and we've caught up with Bob and Bob prime, and we're standing at rest with respect to them in their little space there. Okay, so here is Bob and here is Bob prime. Okay, and they are standing on that platform there, and that platform extends between Bob and Bob prime. Okay, at t equals 0, okay, and Bob and Bob prime have synchronized their clocks. Okay, that's 0, 0, you know, 1, 1, 2, 2, and so on and so forth. Okay, how would I draw this platform, that platform in this picture? What would I do? Okay, I see this. Okay, so that platform at, say, one instant of time, suppose I take a snapshot, a picture, at when Bob and Bob prime's clock both read 0, I take a snapshot. And what do I see? Well, I see like a stick that goes from, you know, Bob to Bob prime. So at t equals 0, I see this little platform like this. Okay. And then at t equals 1 second, I take another snapshot, and I say, oh, same, the platform's over here now. Platform's right there. So there's something in the space between Bob and Bob prime at t equals 1 second. That's their platform. At t equals 2 seconds, that's their platform, and so on. So in fact, their platform exists at all instants of time in between. So their platform, while it occupies one space dimension, it actually occupies three space dimensions, right? But let's just ignore the other dimensions. So basically, it has a length. It occupies some physical, the atoms all along a line occupy some physical distance in one space dimension. Okay? But those atoms exist over time. And the next instant of time, they're also there. Next instant of time, they're also there. So in fact, they occupy a two-dimensional volume, two-dimensional space-time volume, which is this whole volume between Bob and Bob prime, which has existed for maybe a long time in the past, up to however long in the future they have that platform between them. Okay, so this object here occupies three-dimensional volume in space, but it's also sitting there, and it's occupying that space for, you know, now. For now, for all times in the future here. So it's occupying actually four-dimensional space-time volume. Okay, so that one-dimensional platform occupies a two-dimensional space-time volume between Bob and Bob prime. Okay, is that clear? All right. So now let's look at what the platforms look like. These snapshots of the platforms at different times for Bob and Bob prime. Let's look at what that platform looks like according to Alice and Alice prime, who see that platform drifting by them through their space. Well, let's see. So here is Alice, and here is Alice prime. And I'll try to, again, draw this kind of carefully. That's Bob. That's Bob prime. Okay, and now let's see here. If we look at this picture over here, what we are saying in this picture, when we say that Bob and Bob prime consider this event to be simultaneous with this event, means that they could, for example, synchronize their clocks and say that the clock reading, Bob's clock reads 0 here, and Bob's prime's clock reads 0. And then, you know, notwithstanding that there's some time dilation, the tick marks are further apart here. But anyways, they are evenly spaced tick marks like this. Okay, so if that's 0 and that's 0, then if that's 0, that's 1, 2, 3. If that's 0 over there, then that's 1, 2, 3, and so on. Okay, so I just want you to observe that these lines of simultaneity, 0, 0, 1, 1, 2, 2, those lines are tilted up a little bit. Okay? So in this picture, for example, Bob's clock could read 0 right there. He could have zeroed his clock just as the left end of the platform passes Alice. Okay, so if Bob's clock reads 0 here, where along Bob Prime's axis will Bob Prime's clock read 0? Here? Where? Tell me when to stop. I'm not getting much of a response. Have I gone too far? Back up? Okay, so right here? You happy with that? Okay. So basically, so it's about there, let's say. Let's see, does that look good? Yeah, so it's about there. So that's 0. Okay, and this is, say, 1, and this is 2, and this is 3, and so on. This is 0, that's 1. Let's take these same steps here, 2 and 3. Okay, so now let's take this picture, which is the picture of Bob's platform at various different times, from the point of view of Bob and Bob Prime, and translate it over to this picture. Where does this guy go? Well, it goes from 0 to 0. When Bob's clock reads 0, and when Bob Prime's clock reads 0, it's a line extending from that event to that event. So it's a line extending from that event to that event. Oh, okay, so that's that line. Okay, so that's the platform at t equals 0, according to Bob and Bob Prime. Okay, this over here, this guy here, is the platform, according to Bob and Bob Prime, when both of their clocks read 1. This guy over here, well, that's over here. This is the platform, according to Bob and Bob Prime, when their clocks read 2, and similarly down the line, like that. Okay? In this picture here, where Bob and Bob Prime are considered to be at rest, this is Bob's time axis. This is CTB right here. Where's Bob's x-axis? Is it here? Here? Hands out. Where's it go? Can't go like that. Or is that a question? Straight out. Bob. So Bob's x-axis. It goes straight out like this, right? Okay, so that's Bob's x-axis. That's x according to Bob. And x according to Bob Prime would lie parallel with that. Okay? So the point is, Bob's x-axis, what he considers to be his x-axis, things happen on his x-axis. He positions things. Like at one instant of time, t equals 0, he can say, oh, I see a chair over there, 1 meter away from me, and I see a table 2 meters away from me at that instant of time, and I see a baseball 3 meters away from me. Okay, at a later time, oh, I see the same chair in the same position, the same desk in the same position. Oh, but the ball has moved over here. So the ball has been moving around through space and so on. So this is his x-axis. Okay, at t equals 0, at t equals 1, at t equals 2, and so on. So the x-axis lies along the platform. So that's Bob's x-axis. Okay, at, say, t equals 0, this is at t Bob equals t Bob prime equals 0. Okay. And then at a later time, so I've drawn an x-axis. Here I've drawn an x-axis in this room. At t equals 0, it's that x-axis. At t equals 1, well, now it's that x-axis. So at t equals 1, this is Bob's x-axis. X Bob at tb equals t Bob prime equals 1 second. And so on down the line. Okay, so the point is that Bob's x-axis is tilted up. Okay, so if we can summarize this as follows. It's a neat little picture here. If this is Alice's a space axis and Alice's time axis, Bob's time axis is this guy over here. Right? And his tick marks are maybe time dilated, et cetera, but his clock is ticking along that axis. And his x-axis is this guy. Okay? And 45 degrees, the speed of light, is that guy. Question. If this, if the slope, what is the slope of this line, first of all? It's related to v, his speed, right? What is the slope? Is the slope v? What do you think?
No.
No. Okay, it might be actually hard to see what it is. Maybe not, I don't know. But
ratio of speeds.
Ratio of speeds, why? Ratio of what speed to what speed?
Maybe something minus c.
Yes, very good. Okay, so one point is, whatever this slope is, it has to be dimensionless. Because this is measured in meters, and that's measured in meters. The slope is like a rise over a run. If I take a meter divided by a meter, I get something dimensionless. So whatever it is, it has to be dimensionless. And we also know that it depends upon the velocity. Because when the velocity is small, the line is like that. When the velocity is large, the line is like that. So the slope depends upon the velocity. But it must depend upon the velocity v in a dimensionless way. So it has to depend upon v over c. Question, is it v over c, the slope? Negative v over c, that's good, good thing. That's not right, but it's good along the... c over v, very good. Okay, so the slope of this is c over v. Okay, and that's because when v is small, then c over v is large, and we're talking about a large slope. It's nearly vertical. Okay, when v approaches c, well, this approaches 1, a slope of 1, 45 degrees. Next question, what's the slope of this line? V over c. Okay, that's just an obvious guess, and it turns out to be true. And notice that this slope, the tilting of the time axis and the tilting of the space axis are symmetrical with respect to the 45 degree. Okay, as the velocity approaches the speed of light, Bob's time axis tilts like this. It's almost at 45 degrees. His x-axis is also almost at 45 degrees. And the whole thing scrunches up like that. Okay? Super. All right. So let's see. What time have we got? Oh, we got lots of time. Okay, super. So I could sort of prove for you that this is, in fact, equal, but I'm not going to bother. This is convincing. This is probably convincing enough. Yeah. Yeah, so that's right. I mean, so that's a very important point. So the question has to do with, I mean, okay, so in this picture here, in an ordinary XY diagram like this, we would say that this line and this line are perpendicular. Okay, and now we could rotate these and say, well, maybe it's that line and that line. So consider if we have that line, then that line is perpendicular to it. Okay, in Minkowski space-time, the geometry is a little bit different, and we have to always think carefully, and it might not always be the same as our intuitions that we get from Euclidean. So if this is x and ct here, then this line, if we're given a line like this, okay, the question is, well, what is the line perpendicular to that? If we used our Euclidean intuition, we would just do it like that. But using what we just found out about the x-axis, what would you say? It's tilted up like this. Yeah, so it's actually like that. So these two lines are actually perpendicular in this geometry. Okay, in the sense that some of you might know vectors. So that vector and that vector are, let's call that vector A and that vector B. Those vectors are orthogonal if A dot B equals 0. How many of you know A dot B equals 0, all that stuff? Actually, most of you. Okay, so in the same way, this is Bob's time axis. Let's call it T. And this is, this is a time axis. This is a sort of a space axis. Let's call it S. These two vectors, S, T dot S, 0, they're actually perpendicular. This is a right angle here, so to speak. We wouldn't say right angle. We would just say orthogonal. Yeah. Yeah, so you can define angles. You can talk about it. So this is 90 degrees. If you considered, say, I don't know, like that line and, say, I don't know, say that line. Well, these are not 90 degrees. They're something else. And you can define. Yeah, so you can have negative inner products, too. So it just implies that, you can have negative inner inner products. Well, okay. Let me say it more carefully. So I don't want to actually go all down this road, but anyways, let me just say quickly that actually T, depending on how you do things, T dot T is going to be positive, and S dot S is negative, and T dot S is zero.
Why is S dot S?
And the reason is, I mean, that so the dot product is, let's even just go back to this simpler case. Let's take this vector over here and this vector over here. Well, okay, it has to do with the fact that our Pythagoras' theorem has a minus sign in it. Okay, so when you say something like here, you know, you say this distance here is c squared is a squared minus v squared. Okay, so the square of this distance is the square of this minus the square of this. Then you can see that that you can get into situations. Well, first of all, if you make this distance the same, you get zero. And then if you go to the other side, if this is now past 45 degrees, then if you use the same formula, the square of this distance will be negative. Okay. But all it's telling you is there's a. It's not anything mysterious. It's just telling you that. It's just distinguishing between separations between events that are called time-like or space-like. Okay, so here is here's a pair of events, like there and there. This pair of events has what's called a time-like separation. Okay, they have no spatial separation in this coordinate system, but they are separated in time. Between this pair of events here, a pair of points in the space-time diagram, the separation is called space-like for obvious reasons. There's no time separation. Okay, but this concept of space-like and time-like extends beyond just vertical and horizontal. Okay, so the distance, if you were to use Minkowskian geometry, the square of the distance between any pair of events whose slope is less than 45 degrees, that will be positive. Okay, and then at 45 degrees, the separation becomes zero. And then for two events that are separated such that the angle is greater than 45 degrees, the square of the separation is negative. Okay, it's no big deal. It just distinguishes events that are more in a time direction and events that are more in a separated by more of like a space direction. See, one of the crucial things about all of this is, given any pair of events, there are two ways that you can connect those two events. Two ways. So here's my space-time, and there's an event. Okay, this is here, now, there, then. Okay, so it's like this, and then over here, this. Those are the two events I've just drawn. And I can connect that with a straight line. And I can interpret that straight line as the world line of an observer who is moving at a velocity such that the tilt is right so that they intersect those two lines. Because if I have an event here and then one later over here, clearly there's somebody who could be walking by for whom the event happens there, then there, like at the same location, but at a different time. Same location for them, right at the location of their clock, but at different times. Okay, so these are called time-like separations, separated events. Here's a pair of events that are not for which you can't do that, because you put a line through here. This is greater than 45 degrees. It would take someone moving faster than the speed of light. However, notice that, and let me just draw this, cheat a little bit here. Let's take this event over here, this pair of events. Okay. If I draw a line between this pair of events, what is that line physically? If this is Bob's time axis here, what's that line? That's his space axis. Okay, so if I have two events that have a space-like separation, okay, which means kind of looks like this, but maybe with a bit of a tilt, I can always find an observer drifting through space such that his or her x-axis, such that these two events would lie right on his or her x-axis, which means that they would happen simultaneously. Which means actually, so sort of like events like this, this is simultaneous for me, okay? But if I make them just a tiny bit off, you know, just like really, really quickly, but it actually has to be really quick, actually, because basically, if there isn't sufficient time, so I'm doing two events like this, and I'm making them so close in time that there isn't sufficient time for light to get from here to here in between. If I have two events like that, then I can always find someone who's moving in this space such that those events are simultaneous, for whom those events are simultaneous. Okay, I didn't want to go all the way down that road because I want to do something more interesting. Okay, yeah? Area? Yeah, so we can do, so we could do area. So the platform has a certain length, which we measure in meters, and it could be sitting there for a certain amount of time, which we also measure in meters. So suppose it's 2 meters in length, and it has been sitting there for 2 meters worth of time. Then the area that it occupies is 4 square meters of space-time. Yeah, so definitely you can do that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let me just see. Okay. So let me show you this. I think this is kind of neat. So I wonder if I can get this actually working. So this has to do with just relativity of simultaneity and all that kind of stuff. Document camera. Go. Oops. Wrong button. Oh, there we go. Looks like there might be some success. Oh, look at that. It actually worked. Okay, super. Okay, and okay, so let's have a look at this picture here, and I wonder if we have a do we have a ruler somewhere? I probably shouldn't look in the bathroom for a ruler, right? A big ruler, big like a meter stick. Yeah, meter stick. Yep. Oh, what about this thing? Okay, this is too floppy of a ruler. A what stick? Oh yeah, perfect. Super idea. Here we go. Pool stick. Okay, hang on. Yep. Oh. Yes.
Okay, so for Bob's axis in relation to Alice, the scale will be smaller?
The scale will be different, yeah. So let's see. So if we were to draw that, I hate that. I hate when it does that. Okay. So. I know I'm going to trip on this one. So let's actually fill in the coordinates in a little bit more detail here. So normally, okay, so here's X Alice, CTA, CT for Alice. Now, when we draw, okay, so we put tick marks on here, right? That's 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds, and so on. 1 meter, 2 meters, 3 meters, 4 meters, 5 meters, and so on. And then we draw a coordinate grid, a space-time coordinate grid, right? And so Alice's x-axis at t equals 0 is this one. At t equals 1, it's this axis. At t equals 2, it's this one, and so on and so forth. Okay, and Alice's time axis, this is Alice's time axis. What she does is we need another axis up here. And so what she does is she, along her x-axis, there's herself, and then there's her twin, Alice prime, and her double twin, Alice double prime, Alice triple prime, and so on. So she lines her x-axis with a whole bunch of identical Alices, a whole bunch of identical clocks. Okay, and here's Alice prime's clock, like this. So this is CT Alice prime. And then this is CT Alice double prime, and so on. Okay, so in fact, Alice's space-time is filled with this coordinate grid in the following way. She's got an x-axis, which is marked out like this, and standing along that x-axis are a zillion Alice primes, all with watches that are clocks which are synchronized with each other. Okay. So, and then when something goes by, when something is thrown by, for example, then the way they reckon how that object moves through their space-time is they simply time. You know, well, Alice saw the object on her x-axis at x equals 0 when her watch read 0. And then Alice prime saw it whip by maybe when her clock read 1.5. And then Alice double prime saw it whip by when it was, say, up to here, 4. Okay, and so they would put together the trajectory of the particle that way. Okay, so Alice and Alice prime, all of the Alices collectively, the Alice frame, is made up of a zillion clocks lined up along an x-axis. Okay, and then any point along here is just defined by, well, which Alice saw it and at what time. Okay, so now Bob comes along, and Bob says Bob is moving relative to Alice. Okay, and so his axis, his time axis is, say, up like that. So that's CT Bob. Okay, and as we discussed, his space axis is tilted by the same amount, whatever this tilt is, same amount like that. So that's X Bob. Okay, now Bob's other X axes, where are they? Let me say it differently. Let's look at the time axis first. Okay, we got the other time axes for Alice by putting a bunch of Alice primes next to her along her x-axis and letting them move through time. Okay, so we make these timelines by putting a bunch of Bobs along here and letting their world lines, letting them run through time. How do I draw their world lines? A Bob prime. How do I draw Bob prime's world line on that picture? Parallel. It's parallel with this one. Okay. And but there's also going to be some time dilation. So let's exaggerate it to sort of be double, or like that. So that's time. That's one unit of time for Bob and Bob prime. If that's one unit of time, 1 meter for Bob in time, that's 1 meter for Bob in space. Okay, and so then we draw Bob's axis like this. Okay, that's the Bob prime who's 1 meter away. And we draw it parallel here, and parallel here, and parallel here, and parallel. Okay, and Bob's space axis just goes up parallel with that space axis. Okay, so it looks like that. Okay, and so that's like two coordinate grids superimposed on each other. So a given event like this, like right there, okay, was seen by Alice number 1, 2, 3, 4. Was seen by Alice 4 at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on her clock. Okay, but according to Bob and Bob prime, that event was seen by Bob 1.5 at time 1, 2. Okay. So does that make sense? Okay. And then notice that 45 degrees, if I've drawn this nicely, is right straight down the middle like that. Okay. Okay. So let's look at this. Wow, that is really weird. It knows when this thing is down or up. Okay, so this is Alice's world line here. That's time according to Alice. Here's space according to Alice. This is Bob's world line here, up there. That's CTB. And this is Bob's x-axis here, xb, at one instant of time. Here's his x-axis at a later instant of time, at a later instant of time, and so on and so forth. Okay, so what is all this about? Well, the point of this is we have this we have an array of colored lights. Okay, and Alice has built this array, and she's really pleased with this whole thing. So what it is it's multicolored lights. There's one multicolored light located here, one here, one here, one here. And each one of those multicolored lights cycles through three. First it goes blue, then it goes red, then it goes green. Then it goes blue, red, green, blue, red, green, blue, red, green. Okay, and the next light is just out of sync by one step. It starts at green, then goes blue, red, green, blue, red, and so on. Okay, so she's got these lights. And as far as Alice is concerned, what she sees at t equals 0 on along her x-axis, you know, simultaneously, at one instant of time, like she takes a snapshot with her camera, at one instant of time, she sees the lights having all these various colors. Okay, and then at the next instant of time, okay, 1 second later, all of the lights switch over. Okay, this one, the blue goes to red, the green goes to blue, et cetera, et cetera. And so then she sees this pattern of lights. Okay, and then the next second she sees this pattern of lights, and so on. So as far as Alice is concerned, for example, she'll see the red light at t equals 0, over here. Then the next second she'll see the red light there, the next second the red light there, and so on. So for her, it'll look like a bunch of colored lights that are moving this way and changing color. Okay. So what does Bob see? So Bob is now moving in this direction. Okay, so he's moving like this, and he's looking at these colored lights that he's drifting by. Okay, and what he sees is he happens to be at such a speed that at this instant of time, he sees all of the lights are blue. They're all blue. And then at the next instant of time for him, he sees they're all red, and then they're all green. Okay? Does that make sense, this picture? Okay, so relativity of simultaneity is a very real effect that you can, you know, you can, which is very, very important. Yeah? Yeah? Oh, you want this thing up? Okay. All right.
Does Bob see blue and red together, and then just then, and you see that color between?
So we're talking about Bob.
Yeah.
Okay.
In I don't know half second.
Yeah, no. Oh, at the half second. Oh, okay. Okay, at the half second. Okay, so what's happening at the half second? So let's see. So at the half second, we're sitting here. And he will see, so he'll see half red and half blue. Half red, half blue. That's right. So he'll see it all blue. And then in making the transition to all red, there will be some half red and half blue. That's right.
More red and more red and more red and
then. And then all red. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes. So his time, he's a little bit time dilated here. So he would see them, so Alice is seeing them switch, say, every 1 second. Okay, so that's 1 second on this diagram here. For Bob, 1 second here. So basically we would have to determine that distance. Oh, I don't know if I can do that in my head, so let's see. Yeah, would it be at a different rate? Okay, is there an easy and obvious answer? All you need to do is just go along here and ask how much time between there. So So basically, it's like this. Suppose it switches like this for Alice, dunk, dunk, dunk. Then for Bob, let's see. For Bob, 1 second for Bob is up here, let's say. So he will see them switch faster. After less than 1 second elapses, he will see a switch. So yeah, it'll be faster. They'll be going faster. They'll be switching faster for Bob than they will for Alice. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, so this is true, this is true. So it'll be all blue for I didn't want to get into all the technical details of this. I didn't want to analyze this thing to death, but yes, you're right. Actually, it'll only be one split second that he sees all blue across the whole thing. And then right after that split second is over, he will start to see red creep in. That's right.
Most of his time, he's seeing two colors.
That's right. That's right. Like it's basically all blue and red, kind of uniformly across, just alternating like this, and then it'll be all green and all red and green, kind of like that. Whereas for Alice, it's a totally different situation. Here, it's like every foot that it changes color. She sees all three colors. Yeah. Okay. All right. So I'm gonna put this thing away now. Okay. I wanna show you something now, which is really cool. Okay, so what I want to talk a little bit about is how is it that we resolve this really weird fact that when I run toward or away from a flashlight, I will measure the same speed c, which can't make sense with any model of light, with any physical model of light. Okay, so let's see. So basically, we're trying to understand principle P2 prime. Okay, that principle which says that the speed of light is for a source at rest, the speed of light is independent of the motion of the observer. Okay, we're trying to see how that makes sense. Okay, so let's start with a much simpler example. The simple example is. We've got Alice here. Here is her x-axis, and Alice is located here on her x-axis, and her clock is ticking away. And so that's Alice's time axis. Now, what we're going to do is, I mean, ultimately what we're doing is we're going to imagine two clocks that are at rest. I mean, okay, actually what we want is a clock at rest that you run toward or away from. So an easy way to accomplish that is have two clocks that are at rest and then just run in one direction. And then you're running toward that one and away from that one, and you kill two birds with one stone. Not that we actually want to kill birds, but just we accomplish two goals with one approach, okay? So so I'm just going to sketch this thing first because I just want to get it right, and then I'll talk about it. Okay, so what this is we've got a Bob and a Bob prime. And between, so physically what we have is down here, I'll just draw the picture in space. We've got a Bob and a Bob prime sitting on a platform which is at rest. And they know the length of the platform is L. And there's a flashlight located here and a flashlight located back here. Okay, and at t equals 0, according to Alice, both of these flashlights go off simultaneously, okay, and they send light signals like this. Okay, so this light signal goes, hits Bob prime first, crosses the platform, hits Bob, and then goes on. The other light signal does that. Okay, so first off, let's translate this into a space-time diagram. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to put this down here. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, so at t equals 0, these light signals, they start moving. Let's look at this light signal by itself. It starts moving like this. First it hits Bob prime. Okay, so it comes like this. First it hits Bob prime, the right end of the platform. And then it drifts across the platform. So it drifts across the platform. And then it hits Bob at the left end of the platform at a later time. Okay, so this is the platform at an earlier time when the light signal first hit, you know, hit the right end of it. This is the platform at a later time when the light signal had crossed the platform and hit the other end. Okay, platform at earlier time, platform at later time. And then the light signal just continues on to the left. And similarly for this light signal, it starts down here. It travels. It hits Bob first. Okay, and then it travels across the platform, hits the platform, the right end of the platform at a later time, and then continues on. Okay, so that's a very simple picture. And the length of this guy is L. The width of the platform is L. Okay. And because these are obviously 45 degrees here, we know that if this is L, then this is also L. So in other words, the time elapsed for Bob between the time that this light signal, the signal from the left here, hit the platform, and the time that the signal from the right here hit the platform, that time difference is L as well. Okay, so that's L, that's L, that's L, and that's L. Okay, so if we were to say, okay, well, Bob and Bob prime are going to measure the speed of light coming from these two flashlights. Okay, so what we would do is Bob and Bob prime know that their clocks are synchronized. Okay, they've synchronized their clocks, and all they do is they just say, okay, well, here this light signal crosses here, and Bob knows that whatever reading was on Bob prime's clock at this moment is the same as the reading on his clock at this moment. Okay, and then he waits for that light signal to cross the platform, so it goes like this, and essentially he's timing how long it takes to cross the platform. Okay, so Bob says that the velocity of light coming from this flashlight here is what? Distance over time. So what is the distance? L. And what is the time? Right, so the time elapsed, C times the time elapsed for Bob is L. So the time elapsed for Bob is L over C. And that's C. Okay, so the velocity is the speed of light. Okay, so all is well. And similarly here, if Bob and Bob prime measure the speed of that flashlight, obviously it's the same. Okay, so I'm just describing ultra simple case of this experiment. But now what we want to do is we want to let Bob and Bob prime move, drift to the right. So now Bob and Bob prime are running toward a flashlight. They're also running, they're running toward that flashlight, they're running away from that flashlight. And the question is, what speed do they measure? And if it's C, how is that possible? Okay, so let's draw that picture now. So we got, let's draw it a little bit bigger. Okay, again, this is a little bit tricky to draw, so let me just kind of draw it first and then we'll talk about it. So basically Bob is now moving like that. And Bob prime is moving like that. Okay, and there's a platform connecting these two. I'll try to draw this nicely. Platform connecting the two, between the two. Like that. And whatever length that is, about the same. So it's about like that. I didn't want to go off the board, actually. Okay. Okay, so we got that. And what else do we need here? Well, we're going to need this guy. That. And we're going to need this guy. Like that. Okay, so this is now the scenario where Bob and Bob Prime are on this platform, but they're moving with a speed v. We still got the flashlight over here, emitting a source of emitting a beam of light, and a flashlight located over here, which emits light. Okay, so there we go. Now now let's see. So let's look at this flashlight again. So first of all, as far as Bob and Bob Prime are concerned, the length of that their platform is L. Okay. And so what that means, suppose L is like 5 meters. It means that there's 5 tick marks along here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so that's 1 meter. Okay, so if this is 1 meter in this picture, then that's 1 second. Or one, well, also 1 meter, sorry. So the time axis has the same scale in meters. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so I haven't actually proved that, but when we draw this axis, like that guy and that guy, the slope of this guy is c over v. The slope of this guy is v over c, as we agreed. So it's just reciprocal. Okay, and so just like for Alice's clock, if this is 1 meter on her clock, then I just take that meter and put it over here, and that's 1 meter on Alice's x-axis. On Alice's on Bob's time axis, there's some time dilation, so the distance between the tick marks is bigger. This is 1 meter in time according for Bob, but if that's 1 meter in time according for Bob, then that's 1 meter in space according to Bob. Okay, so whatever scale you have along that axis, it's the same scale along that axis. They're both measured in meters. Is that believable? Okay, so that's in fact true. So if the length here is L, for example, 5 meters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this will be 5 meters in time. Okay, so C delta T Bob is going to also be L, the same number of meters. Okay, so again, so now they're drifting, Bob and Bob Prime are drifting to the right. And so they're running toward that flashlight. And so a pulse of light is sent out here. First it hits Bob Prime. So it goes do-do-do-do-do-do. First it hits Bob Prime. So this is Bob Prime at the right end of the platform. Okay, then it moves across the platform. Okay, so it moves from one end of the platform to the other end, and then it hits the left end of the platform here. It hits Bob at a later time, okay, and then it keeps on going to the left here. Okay, and so the reading on Bob Prime's clock when the light signal hits the right end, whatever that is, 7.2 seconds or whatever, we know that because this is a line of simultaneity, that event is simultaneous with that event, and Bob and Bob Prime have synchronized their clocks. They say, Bob says, oh, well, that my clock was also 7.2. Okay, and then Bob just waits for the signal to cross. To cross the platform any times how long it takes. And well, that's this time. And then he says, oh, well, look at that. The velocity of light is distance over time. Well, the distance that it went, well, that's just L. It went across the platform. And the time, delta TB, is just L over C, same as before. And he sees that it's C. Okay, so these guys are running toward the flashlight, and they measure the same speed c. And similarly, for running away from the flashlight, we just look at this one, and we say, well, the time taken was this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the time it took to go from the left end of the platform over to the right end. And so the speed here, the velocity of light, is the distance covered here divided by the time. But the point is, that the length, this length, is the same as that length. So when you take the ratio of those two, you just always get the speed of light. Okay, so what's really important here is, independent of any model of light, whether you think of light as a wave in ether or a particle in vacuum or whatever, independent of that entirely, okay, what you're doing is just something geometrical. Okay, so light is just doing this, and you can see that if you're moving toward the source of light or away from the source of light, you're going to measure the same thing because of, very importantly, relativity of simultaneity. Okay, the fact that this x-axis tilts up like this is crucial to make this length here the same as that length. So this is like it's a parallelogram here. And we've kept, just like this, it's a square. Yeah, it's a square. Thank you. This is a square over here. And we've simply taken that square, we've tilted these two sides of it. But then, when we tilt these two sides, if these two sides didn't tilt as well, then we'd be in trouble. Okay, but we tilt those sides, but then we also tilt those sides, such that we still end up with a square. And it is exactly a square. The lengths are the same. Those two lengths are the same. So the ratio will give you the speed of light. Moreover, these are 90 degrees. All of these are 90 degrees. These are perpendicular, okay, in this Minkowskian geometry. It's still a square. As far as Bob and Bob Prime are concerned, this thing is a square just like this. If we run and catch up with Bob and Bob Prime, that square would look like this. That's what they would be seeing. It's just that we're looking at that square from Alice and Alice Prime's perspective, where it is in motion. Okay, and then it looks like this funny kind of parallelogram. But indeed, it remains a square all the time. So what's crucial is this relativity of simultaneity. The fact that when I snap my fingers, you know, here, simultaneous for me, simultaneous for Bob and Bob Prime, it's not simultaneous for Alice. This happens first, then that. That tilting of the x-axis is crucial for understanding this T2 prime. So that's it. So that's essentially what Einstein wanted to do. He wanted to say, OK, principles P1 and P2 are obvious and believable. They imply something totally unbelievable, P2 prime. How can I make that believable? Well, the only way was to change our understanding of the structure of space-time. Space-time looks like this is the nature of space-time. Okay? And then this becomes totally obvious. Is it totally obvious, or am I exaggerating? Okay, super. Let's go get some dinner. Some dinner. What are we doing now? We're going over to.
Before we go, we are going.